death.
So they're talking snow? It's depressing.
Was it snowing? I didn't. I mean,
no,
I didn't,
not yet.
That far, so I
they said, whoops.
Well, the Senate Tax Committee to order.
Yeah,
thank you, members, for being here early this morning. I think we will start with Senator Kent this morning. She's here and her testifiers are here. So, Senator Kent, Senate File 2251, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, members. I appreciate the opportunity to bring Senate File 2251 to you this morning. This is a Metropolitan Council agency bill which seeks authorization to issue regional bonds for regional transit capital needs. As background, please recall that the Met Council must receive legislative authorization to issue regional bonds for transit capital projects. Regional transit bonds are not state general obligation bonds, rather they are funded by the Met Council Transit Debt Service Levy. Regional transit bonds support the capital projects of all regional transit providers and services provided throughout the seven-county metro area, including Metro Transit, Suburban Transit Providers, Metro Mobility, and Transit Link Dial-A-Ride. Fleet replacement represents the greatest portion of the regional transit bond funds, about 80%. Buses are replaced on fixed schedules aligned with FTA guidelines. Transit bonds are also used for capital preservation, park and ride lot expansions and improvements, transit station improvements, and other capital equipment that help the regional transit programs operate efficiently. This request is for $37 million in 2014 and $38.3 million in 2015 for a total of $75.3 million of new bonding authority across the 2 years. Here with me today is Judd Shetland, the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, who will help provide more information and answer questions. Thank you.
Mr. Shetland.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to Senator Kent for carrying this bill. This is a bill that we bring before the legislature every year in order to receive the authorization for us to be able to levy for our capital purposes for our transit system. A couple changes in this year's bill. What we have done is made an adjustment for inflation. The previous years we've come before the committee with a 1% increase. Last year we received $35.8 million. We generally come back with a 1%. However, this year we've made an adjustment for inflation, which we haven't done for over 12 years. And so you'll see in 2014 we're asking for $37 million, and in 2015 we're asking for $38.3 million. This also comes with the full backing of the suburban transit providers. I don't believe they are here this morning, but they have authorized me to tell you that they are 100% behind this bill and support the adjustment that we have made. And I can answer any other questions that you have, but again, we appreciate the opportunity to be here and enjoyed your support in the past and hope we have it again this year. So thank you.
Thank you. And Senator Kep, or Mr. Shetland, what mechanism? I see the $1.3 million of inflation. What mechanism did you use to calculate that?
Mr. Chair and members, since we have a very large fleet replacement, we did a calculation over the past 5 years. We went back to see what the inflationary cost for our fleet has been. Since fleet is about 80% of what we use these funds for, we use that number, and then we use the implicit price deflator on the remaining 20%, which just is your basic inflation, and that's where we arrived at about 3.5% inflation. So we went through our finance folks to make sure that we were hitting the mark on that.
And Mr. Shetland, it isn't completely unusual for the two-year request. I think that's been done once before. Why the two-year request this year?
Mr. Chair and members, the reason why we're asking the two-year request this year is because it just gives us some additional budget certainty. We made sure that the bill reads that only in 2014 are we allowed $37 million. In 2015, we're asking for $38.3 million. We're not asking to commingle that. What it does, though, is it allows us to enter into contracts. Oftentimes when we are doing a major bus purchase, we have to have the authority in hand before we're able to enter into a contract. And once we receive the buses is then when we start issuing the bonds. But it does give us some certainty into the future. And we have done this before. And we, you know, that's where we settled this year. And we would just appreciate this your support. Also, I see James Clark is here. I just spoke for the suburban providers a minute ago and offered their support. But I know Mr. Clark can probably do that himself if you'd like. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And so you won't be back next year for a request, but the following year?
Senator, and Mr. Chair and Senators, we would not be back for a request for 2015. We may be back with a request for 2016.
Any questions, members? Senator Senja.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chapman, perhaps the obvious is it's largely for buses.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sinjum, yes, about 80% of it is for buses, but also our metro mobility vehicles and some of the smaller vehicles that we have in our transit fleet. But again, about 80% of these funds go to replacing fleet. And it's that's why we come back every year is because we are retiring vehicles and in the process of procuring vehicles. So this is the local match that we use for a lot of the bus or fleet replacement. So about 80% of it is federal. 20% of it is this. Are these funds that we use to match our federal funds for fleet?
Mr. Chair, just follow up.
Senator,
is this kind of a typical request? I'm not remembering. Is it really what I'm asking? Do you sequence your buses and you don't replace them all at once by any means?
That's Mr. right, Mr. Chair, Senator Sinjum. Yes, we do this every year. We replace. Our buses have a federal, life of between 12 to 14 years. And so every year that we come back before the legislature, we use these bonds to replace those vehicles that have are ready to be retired. So we've been doing this for almost 20 years now and have come to the legislature for that authority.
And Senator Sinjum, the unusualness of this one is that it's a two-year request now. It has been done before in 2000.
Yep.
Anything else? Thank you, Senator Kent. Thank you, Mr. Shepman. Chair will lay 2251 over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Senator Cooney.
Thank you.
Senator Coonan, Senate File 2447. Senator Coonan, I understand you have an A1 amendment. We do not have a quorum yet, so we're not going to be able to act on that. But let's hear your testimony, and then we will lay this over and adopt the amendment when we have a quorum.
Okay. The presentation will be based off the A1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Members, I believe that's in your packet.
All right, thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chairman,
Clinton.
Committee members. Currently, the State Fair, the State Agricultural Society, has the authority to issue bonds. This authority is currently set to sunset July 1st, 2015. This bill is when it's amended with the A1, pushes the sunset out until July 1st, 2025. So it extends the bond issuing authority for 10 years, and this is for other than bonds to refund outstanding bonds. The language as introduced would remove the sunset language altogether, and as you can see on the revenue estimate, there's no impact there. And, Mr. Chairman, that's the bill, and I do have a couple of people who have a few comments.
Sure. Whoever would like to go first. Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Joe Bagnoli with McGrantia on behalf of the State Agricultural Society, the State Fair. I don't have anything to add. I've got Jerry Hammer, the head of the State Fair, the Mr. Big at the State Fair, for any questions you might have on the fair or the legislation. I think Senator Coonan did a great job of explaining what it does.
And Senator Coonan, I see that in the A1 amendment you have removed the you were eliminating the need for the MMB approval. Okay with that still being part of this request, that they you have to sign, get the written approval of MMB?
Yes, that is part of the A1 amendment. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And then also, the last time these this authority was extended, it was for 6 years, and your request is for 10 years. Would Senator Coonan, either you or your testifiers want to address that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name again is Jerry Hammer. I'm the general manager of the State Fair. It's just a little bit of background, by way of background. We first received the authority in 2003. The idea is that we issue bonds based on State Fair revenue. The state has no obligation at all with these bonds, and they're used for capital work. The first time we used the authority was right away for renovation of the grandstand. We used it again in 2008 to put roofs on two of the livestock barn, build a new bazaar, and we used it again a few months ago to get financing for a new transit center and exhibit area. Every 5 years, it's an exercise, basically. By extending the authority out a little further, it just doesn't require us to come quite as often to get extension of this. But the bill has, or the statute now, as adopted back in 2003, has done a lot to help us make improvements to the fair. Again, we do all of that with nothing but fair revenue generated by the fair, and this has allowed us to do some substantial improvements and improve the grounds quite a bit. We've done over $100 million in work to State Fair facilities. About 20% of that has been financed. The rest is out of operating, so we're in good shape to do the work.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hammer. Any questions, members? Thank you, Senator Coonan. We will lay Senate File 2447 over. When we have a quorum, we will adopt the A1 amendment and then lay the bill over as amended for inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senate File 2447 is laid over. Are you ready, Senator Rest? Are you ready?
Always. Which one am I doing?
Senator Rest, Senate File 2080, certification of proposed levy deadline and extension.
Hit the ground running.
Good morning, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 2080 is a just a straightforward extending the deadline from September 15th to September 30th for local governments, some local governments, to certify their proposed levies to their county auditors. Towns and special taxing districts are still bound by September 15th, but this would allow others just a little bit more time to do that, and it came at the request of some local governments. You can see from the revenue estimate that there is no cost to doing that. No impact on the state general fund, and it would give the local governments just a bit more time. So I hope that the committee will act favorably on the bill for further consideration.
And Senator Rest, I do remember Mr. Nord, Jason Nord, formerly of the DOR, I think he works for Attorney General now, but he had a timeline of all the deadlines and start dates for property tax filing. Is this change going to cause
problems? Well, in part, as I understand it, it has an impact to get better information relative to being able to be prepared for the fiscal disparities calculations and so forth. It's supported by the Municipal Legislative Commission, which is that group of suburban, metropolitan cities that have that are non-LGA cities, and it just allows those communities just a couple more weeks in order to understand the implications of the fiscal disparities information that they get. So that's what the relationship. I don't know if you have in your packet the handout, but there is, maybe this is the chart that you were referring to, Mr. Chairman, similar, which shows the impact of the availability of the fiscal disparities information on a city's ability to budget. And by giving a couple more weeks to set that, they could be more accurate and, I think they believe, more responsible in setting their budgets.
Any questions, members? Anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 2080 from the cities or the counties?
I might also point out that the Minnesota Association of County Officers is not opposed to this delay either.
Okay. Seeing no questions, Chair will lay Senate File 20 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Rest.
2080.
Senate File 2080. And we do have a quorum now, and Senator Coonan previously had presented the Senate File 2447 with regard to the state fair bonds. We had the A1 amendment that needed to be adopted, so let's take 2447 off the table, and Senator Coonan moves the A1 amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Senate File 2447, the A1 amendment. Any questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. The Chair will now lay Senate File 2447 as amended over for possible inclusion. Thank you, members. Senator Rest, Senate File 1287.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 1287 comes to the Tax Committee by way of Transportation Public Safety Committee and the Judiciary Committee, where it was where it's been heard previously, and it is a proposal to allow the title to a motor vehicle to transfer on the death of the owner if there's a named beneficiary. This practice is adopted and in law in about 10 or 11 other states, and it allows the owner of a vehicle to, again, to transfer their vehicle to a named beneficiary without having the automobile or the vehicle go into an estate or go into probate, much the same way that other items, other assets, which where you have a named beneficiary, do not go into the estate. And the issue came to me a couple of years ago from a widow who had to go through a lot of paperwork in order to gain title to her deceased husband's car. And the proposal doesn't give any named beneficiary any rights to the asset, to the car, while the person is still alive. The person can change the beneficiary at any time they want. They can name more than one beneficiary if they're co-beneficiaries. But it's a simplification of a process that is done in a number of other states, and it seems to me that even though it wouldn't help my constituent, that it might be a good thing for many of the rest of us who would like to put that kind of designation on a title of a car. And so, again, I hope the committee will act favorably on it. The reason why it needed to come to the tax committee is we wanted, just like other transfers that that do not create a taxable event, we wanted to make, and the department said this wouldn't, but the language is in there to make sure that transferring a card from one person to another upon their death does not create a taxable event. It's more like a gift rather than there being any consideration where if there is any consideration when you transfer to a relative, for example, you do need to pay sales tax on that transfer.
And Senator Rest, is there any, I mean, I don't know, is there any other transfer that does not pay sales tax? So if father, mother to child, that's a taxable event? They pay sales tax on that?
It's not so much that it's a taxable event, is that the car goes into an estate. You just, if you die, okay. If you're not dead and you transfer it, if it's a gift, it's not a taxable event. But if there's any consideration in the way in which that term is used, even $100 or something, you're supposed to pay sales tax on it. I might add that there are a number of people that don't do that because they're not aware of the law. So they'll say to their son or daughter, well, give me $500 and you can have the car. And then they go and transfer the title, and they don't record that there was any money that was exchanged, and they don't pay sales tax, but they're supposed to.
Any questions, members? Anybody wish to testify on Senate File 1841? 1287. Seeing none, we will lay Senate File 1287 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Rest. And Senator Rest, Senate File 1841.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to make an extraneous comment. You and I just have the best staff ever.
Yeah.
You know, I walk in, I sit down, my bills are there, you call on me right away, and I come here and I have all the information I need. And I know that your staff, it does that for you as well. We're so fortunate.
Folks that work for us around here make this place run smoothly.
Make it easy. So do you want 1881 now? 1840. Mr. Chairman, there's been a lot of discussion about starting last year when we didn't do it, about Minnesota's tax system and its relationship to the federal Internal Revenue Code. And although we are what is called a conforming state, nevertheless, on occasion, either because we cannot deal with the charge to our revenue, or in some instances, perhaps even that it raises revenue that we consider to be inappropriate, or otherwise a federal tax policy that we don't believe is good tax policy, we don't conform. But there have been some major changes that upon review, I think most legislators have found that there's no policy reason not to conform. It was just a matter of whether we could absorb the otherwise tax relief or spending or loss of revenue. and we're moving toward federal conformity this year as much as we can. One of the issues that is dear to my heart is the working family credit. And in the 80s, President Reagan at the in the 86 ERTA Act, the Economic Recovery and Taxation Act, I think it was called, really expanded the earned income tax credit, which came the notion of it came about in order to go hand in hand with increases in the minimum wage, such as they were, and the and then in the early 90s, then Representative Dawkins and I thought that Minnesota should have a companion part of the of our tax code, and so we passed the working what we then called the working family credit. And it's had a history relative to the earned income tax credit, but for the most part has followed along. And there is a conforming issue that we're proposing in this bill, which is to, the feds raise the amount of income before the phase out for the credit began by $5,000, and that's what this bill does too. Senator Dietzick has a better bill, and in that it's not just conforming, but it is, and the conforming costs about $18 million in tax relief, or it is $18 million in tax relief. Her bill goes further and brings, I think, the actual credit itself, modernizes it, and improves on it. So this is one part of dealing with conformity, and it does deal with conformity. There are other issues dealing with conformity that the chair is going to have. Senator Dietzick's bill improves on it, and I think the two of them together are a step we should take for Minnesota's tax code. Council informs me, we also have great counsel to remind me of things, that I need an oral amendment to Section 1. I wonder if I'd call on her to make that suggestion to us, and then I'll move the amendment as an author's amendment.
Ms. Pollack.
And it is, I already know what it is. We need to delete Section 1. So I would move that Section 1 of Senate File 1841 be deleted.
And Senator Rest, is that separate from the oral amendment? Does it,
no, that's what my oral amendment is, to delete Section 1, and it's the effective date, because we're moving on the working family credit for a fiscal calendar year 14 effective date, not 13.
Senator Rest moves that we remove Section 1. Questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion avails. Amendments adopted.
And Mr. Chairman, I would note that the revenue estimate is to a tax year 2014 effective date, and so the bill as amended reflects the revenue estimate.
Okay. Thank you, okay. Senator Rest. Questions, members? We have a couple of folks that would like to testify. Ms. Madden and Mr. Birch. Did I say that right? Rush. Ms. Madden, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if it might be appropriate to speak to both Senator Rest's bill and Senator Dietzick's bill, or would you like...
Well, to that end, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if Senator Dietzick is going to be presenting her bill, that maybe we should wait and take the testimony on both of them in concert rather than just this one.
Okay.
That'd be okay?
That'll be fine. We'll just wait on that then. So we're going to take testimony. I'm Senator. Do you want to do that now?
I would
Senator
like to
Rest?
Lay my bill over,
okay,
if you
we'll
would,
just lay
and
your
then
bill
have
over and bring
Senator
Dietzick
explain hers, and then testimony on the two of them together.
Okay. We will lay Senate File 1841 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Senator Rest. And Senator Dietzick. Senate File 2484. And Senator Dietzick, I'm informed you have an author's A1 amendment.
Yes.
And is that in our packets? Or?
I believe so.
Yes, it is here. So,
you.
Looks fairly technical, updating the brackets.
Yes.
Senator Dietzick offers the A1 amendment. Questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Same sign. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. As Senator Russ said, Senate File 2484 is basically expansion of her bill. It takes the working family tax credit and increases the amount of the tax credit, and then also raises the income levels, allowing more Minnesotans to qualify. It is targeted and effective. The bill increases the credit for about 331 filers, including about 16,000 newly eligible filers. It increases the max by about 5%. It changes the two-tier structure to a one-tier credit to more closely match the federal earned income tax credit. The total impact is about $48 million, and that includes Senator Rest's portion of the bill and then the increase that is in this bill. So that's basically my short and sweet summary. Mm-hmm. And you can see the numbers. We actually lowered them, and the revenue estimate is based on the A1 amendment.
Any questions, members? So now we will hear testimony. Ms. Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. The Minnesota Budget Project is an initiative of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. We provide independent research, analysis, and advocacy on budget and tax issues.
Ms. Madden, could you pull the mic in a little bit, please?
Thank
you.
Sorry. We provide independent research, analysis, and advocacy on budget and tax issues, with particular attention to the impact that state fiscal decisions have on low and moderate income Minnesotans. I'm testifying today in support of improving the working family credit and would like to thank Senators Rest and Senator Dietzick for bringing these bills forward. These are important bills that make the tax system work better for Minnesota's working families. As Senator Rest mentioned, the Minnesota Working Family Credit is based on the federal earned income tax credit. It is only available to families with earnings from work, and it's designed to help families who work get by on low wages, and it encourages the lowest earning families to work more. New research finds that children in families who receive the federal EITC tend to do better in school and are healthier than other low-income children who don't receive the credit, and they are more likely to attend college and earn more as adults. That's success that we should build on at the state level. We appreciate the two changes that Senator Dietzick makes in her bill, both the federal conformity piece, which makes the credit simpler for taxpayers, and also the expansion of the credit. We think these are important steps forward in making our tax system less regressive. And while last year's tax bill made some important progress on reducing the regressivity of the tax system, it is still the case that our low and moderate income Minnesotans pay a higher share of their income in taxes than the highest income Minnesotans. This is an important step forward, and I strongly encourage you to include 2484 in your omnibus tax bill.
Any questions, members? Quiet group today. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dietzick, I was wondering if you could repeat for me how many new filers you think this bill will support.
I have about 16. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson. I have about 16,000 newly eligible filers, and so the total is about 331,000. In 2010, we've had about 330,000.
Thank you. And then one follow-up. I'm reading a bit here. Can you tell me about the indexing of this bill? Is there an index component in this bill?
My understanding is yes.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yep, my understanding it is indexed. Let's see. I'm going to hand it over to Ms. Madden.
Ms. Madden. Yes,
Chair. Senator Nelson and members of the committee, provisions in the working family credit are indexed for inflation already, just like other provisions in the income tax system, and this bill just, I believe, just continues that practice going forward.
Thank you.
And Senator Nelson, just to kind of put a little scale on this, the working family credit, I believe, is around a $200 million credit currently. So it's about a 20-25% increase in the working family credit. And Senator Nelson.
And that's per year, if I'm not mistaken, not per budget biennium.
I believe so.
Mr. Chair, would you just say what you said again? Was it 25% on $200 million? Is that what you
said? Senator Sanjan, the current program is around $200 million, and this is a $48 million increase.
Okay.
Part of that's conformity. Part of that's an increase. We're also trying to make the curve on the graph more straight. Currently has some funny little bumps in it that we're taking out. But the total increase is around between 20-25%. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sengem, $18 million of it, if you look at my bill, is just the is conformity. I'd also point out that there is just like in the regular income tax, one of the big pieces of that in terms of conformity is the marriage penalty for a standard. For those that claim the standard deduction, and that marriage penalty also has an impact on the working family credit, and that is being addressed as well. So any place where that issue arises, I think there's pretty common support, certainly from me, and I think from everybody, quite frankly, to undo the marriage penalty for standard deduction filers in every place it occurs.
And Ms. Pollack has some information on the indexing for Senator Nelson. Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, there's two components to this bill. One is the increase in the threshold for married joint filers, which is the $5,000 enacted in 2009, which is increased for inflation. So for 2014, it's about $5,400. And then the other, the brackets and the rates for the Minnesota credit allowed are also indexed, and those figures are updated beginning now. So the $5,000 increase threshold is increased with reference to the federal law, and then the inflation adjustment for the Minnesota brackets are adjusted beginning now with these new brackets in the Minnesota credit.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you. And one follow-up. How do the Minnesota brackets compare to other states' brackets?
Ms. Paul.
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure. Maybe Ms. Madden could provide some more information on that.
Ms. Madden.
Sure. Senator Nelson, members of the committee, Minnesota has been unusual compared to other states by having a two-tier structure to our tax credit, our state EITC. By going in this direction, we will be more similar to other states in how our credit is calculated.
Ms. Senator Nelson.
Thank you. And is there a difference in the amounts, in the levels?
Senator
Ms.
Nelson, Mr. Chair, yes, it does vary by state.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson.
So how do our levels, our amounts, compare to other states?
Ms.
Senator Nelson, Mr. Chair, because we've had this different structure, it's been harder to do a direct comparison to other states. And I'm sorry, I don't have that information with me.
Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, thank you. So I have in 2010, about 13.6% of all federal returns filed by Minnesotans received the federal income credit, and the credit was about $1,900. Nationwide, about 19% of all returns claimed an average earned income credit of $2,200. And they range from 12% in Connecticut to 32.8% in Mississippi.
Thank you.
And Mississippi is about $2,500.
And Senator Nelson, one of the things that Minnesota had, their credit had developed, was an unusually odd-shaped graph for who was receiving the credit. Part of the effort here is to take that unusual bump out and try to make it more in line with what the federal earned income credit is. I think perhaps when we, or if we have this in front of the committee before, I'll try to get a graph so you can see what the conformity does and what the other changes do to the graph. It kind of shades in the areas that are getting a little extra money.
Thank you.
It might be helpful. Senator Dietzick.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also have that about 48% of those claiming the credit came from the Twin Cities metro area, so it is evenly split metro-rural that does get the credit.
Anything else, members? Anyone else wish to speak on Senate File 2484? Seeing none, we will lay Senate
Mr.
File.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rushi did just arrive, if you'd like to take his testimony.
Sure.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, the committee was very efficient this morning.
Mr. Rushi. Yes.
Wow.
Okay. We were just moving this bill, so you can be supportive in brief.
I support the bill, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments. Sorry, I'm doing this on the fly. About the working family credit, there's two things that I think that are really important, that we keep the alignment of eligibility intact with the federal EITC so that everybody that knows that they're eligible for EITC is also eligible for working family credit. That's been extremely important in terms of outreach and the effectiveness of the program. So the conformity provision there is very, very important. Also, just want to lend our full-throated support to an increase in the working family credit. This is one of the most powerful anti-poverty tools that we have at our disposal, and just want to compliment the Senate Tax Committee for considering that and hope that it will end up in the final tax bill. I think those are the main points, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the opportunity.
And if you could, please state your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Brian Rushi, Joint Religious Legislative Coalition.
Thank you, Mr. Rushi.
Thank you.
I apologize for moving this up. The schedule
right. I'm glad it's moving, Mr. Chair.
Faster than we thought today. Seeing nothing else and no one else to testify, we will lay Senate File 2484 as amended over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much, members. And the division is meeting.
The division will start meeting at 9:15.
The division is going to start meeting at 9:15 tomorrow. The committee is, or today. The committee is meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, at 8 a.m. We have five bills currently on the agenda: the budget reserve, an LGA fixed PILT fixed bill, federal conformity, Reinhart's Angel Investor Bill, and the Jensen LER. Education funding bill. So with that, the committee's adjourned. Thank you, members.